Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are discussing how to stay healthy during a pandemic and how do we prepare for the next pandemic. We are joined by occupational and environmental medicine physician, Dr. Uma. Dr. Uma, thank you for being here with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Bob, Eric, and Halston. Appreciate it very much.
Of course. Can you tell us a little bit about how your day-to-day has been affected in the great state of Massachusetts?
Absolutely. You mentioned that I'm an occupational environmental medicine physician. I'm also a family doctor and a cannabinoid medicine specialist, and I've been certifying patients in the state of Washington and in the state of Massachusetts since 2014. And we've had some changes that have gone into place. Our medical program has been in force, and thank God this has been validated as an essential medicine by Governor Baker. But the adult use population has been completely stopped right now. Therefore, the dispensaries are only able to be accessible if you have a medical card, a patient, or a caregiver of the patient.
Do you know if they're working to change that? I know that we've seen similar treatment in Denver, although our mayor changed that just yesterday. Or is that just the way things are right now?
Well, I think the bottom line is that we need to make sure that we have supply for our medical patients. And so it's about saying who is going to get to the first, the head of the line. And at the same time, our medical patients, in order to become a qualified patient, you know, they're already recognized as having a debilitating condition. And in addition, many of our patients are also considered immunocompromised. And those are the patients that we're very concerned about with any type of a infection, especially now with this novel coronavirus, is the people that can be predisposed to being harmed. And we want to make sure that our cannabis medical patients will have access to their medicine. If they cannot, we want to make sure that at least we have in place, i.e. delivery systems and or other people that can get their medicine for them.
Well, and we've seen social distancing being enforced as one of the major ways to combat the spread of this coronavirus, to flatten the curve, as they say. And we really want to hear from you on how people can stay healthy during a pandemic like this.
It's interesting you talk about, you know, a pandemic now and hopefully how to prevent it. My experience has been when I was a regional medical director for Kimberly-Clark, we were involved with the avian flu, and we had workers that were exposed in Thailand, and we had that 7,000 employees that we were very concerned, and over 4,000 of them were living in closed quarters. And the concerns were, what would we do if those people were harmed? And I had traveled to Thailand, believe it or not, at that time, with 100 doses of Tamiflu. And we were like, what the frig are we going to do? Who are going to be the 100 people? And how are you going to pick and choose? By the grace of God, we did not need to use even one dose of Tamiflu. And what we did was educate our people and understand that this is about awareness. One of the biggest things that I have been making people aware of is that you've got to be aware of what we're doing. And the second half of the A part is accountability. So hand washing, making sure that people are well hydrated, making sure that they are nutritionally stable, because all of those things, if you're not hydrated and nutritionally stable, if you're not sleeping well, these are all the factors that can make you more predisposed to coming down with something when you could have been able to deter it?
Well, we've seen politicians react slowly to this. We've seen government officials not quite know how to handle it. And perhaps that's understandable, but not really in light of the fact that we knew that this was traveling across the globe since as recently as December and early January of this year. But when it comes down to it, it seems like our public policy discussion right now surrounding coronavirus is not about solely how to prevent the spread, but it's sort of valuing, pricing value assessments from a political perspective of human life versus the viability and sustainability of the economy. What led us to this point? How are we talking about that? Or is this not something that's happened in the past during significant pandemics and the like? Because to your point, whether it was the avian flu or in 2016 in the United States, as I understand it, maybe 20,000 or up to 20,000 people had passed away by virtue of H1N1 derivation strain. So is this public policy discussion novel because of who our leaders are? Or is it just what comes up in these contexts based on your experience?
Well, as you brought up, this is nothing novel. This has happened for, 1720, 1820, 1920. There's nothing new. It's just what is the new flavor of the virus. And at the end of the day, I really believe that this is something that we have created. And each one of us has an opportunity right now to make some choices in how we proceed, how we make our choices, not only as a customer, but also as a consumer, how we have been given the choices of medications, how we've been given a healthcare system that amazingly has so many things that we've come up with and technology has come across. But I think the basics of understanding the second part of my ABCs of life is the behaviors that we need to make sure that we understand that, some of these things has been known for thousands of years. I'm originally from India, and, we had certain things that we did. We didn't bring your slippers in that you wore outside. You washed your hands when you came in. I mean, we eat our food with our hands. We don't have utensils. Here we have utensils. We're getting rid of all of these plastics, generating a whole nother, sustainability question. But when it comes to understanding the health of people, I really believe that we need to come back to our basics and start to look at how we can start to be prepared for these things next time around. My background has also been, I've worked at the largest cleanup site for plutonium at the Hanford site. And when we worked there, we did trials as far as, there would be preparedness. What would we do in case something happened? We would have mock trials. We're not doing those kind of things. We're not teaching our individuals to do those kind of things in their own homes. We're relying on other people to take care of our health and to tell us what to do when it really is becoming our responsibility. And now with this isolation, people are left with a little bit of fear also instilled in them now.
With the desire to end this isolation, we just started it and everybody wants it to end. The sooner we can get this over with and get back to normal, does life resume normality in your opinion when this spike or when this plateaus perhaps? Or couple that with the fact that you read articles and you don't know what's right and what's wrong. You look at the fact that doctors in China are all of a sudden saying, well, people that were infected and recovered are now reinfected and it's even worse. So, is getting to a plateau or to eliminate the spike and get back to normality really the goal? Or to your point, is it about adapting and changing the way we live our lives?
I think it's the later part. I think this is a wake-up call for, this is impacting everybody everywhere in some way, shape, or form. You don't have to have the virus, but you know somebody that has been affected by it. It's affecting everybody in some way, shape, or form. We know that. But I feel that this isn't, again, a way to say, hey, let's look at what we've done. in occupational medicine, and when we look at things, the first thing is to kind of look at the hazard. How do we eliminate the hazard? How do we substitute the hazard? And what are the kind of engineering controls that they put in? What are the administrative controls? And the last thing is personal protective equipment. And here we are kind of doing it as backwards, where we're trying to say, here's the personal protective equipment, which we don't even have enough of right now. And what I'm saying is, let's start getting people healthy. Let's look at the environment that we live in. How are we going to sustain this environment? And let's start to redesign some of these things and educate people and say, hey, let's look at the foods that you're choosing. And we have an opportunity globally. And in 2006, I created Global Health and Hygiene Solutions. And the five principles for health and the five principles for hygiene are the same daggone things I would say today. And the five things for hygiene are: wash your hands, cover your cough, don't litter, don't spit, and brush your teeth. These are global things that I said in 2006, and I stick by them today. As far as the health of people should know five numbers. You should know what your blood pressure is. You should know what your height and weight is so that you know what your BMI is. You should be able to know what your waist-to-hip ratio is. So are you looking at metabolic syndromes? You should know what your good and bad cholesterol is and what your sugars are. So in these five numbers, we're looking at hypertension. We're looking at diabetes. We're looking at metabolic syndrome. We're looking at hyperlipidemia. And understanding that obesity and all of these same things, they're not something new. And these pandemics will happen again. It's just going to be how quickly we can adapt to it, how quickly we can be prepared for it.
They say stay at home and curb the spread of the illness so that there can be, so that we don't overwhelm our healthcare system. I believe there was, you know, a couple of countries in Scandinavia, I think it was Denmark, that put out a press release, warning folks not to go to countries with underdeveloped healthcare systems like the United States. How could you possibly build out an infrastructure of a healthcare system that could anticipate, an enormous increase in the number of patients that would come in? Or is there really a fundamental flaw with our ability to handle things like this? Not the government response, just the healthcare system itself.
You talk about the healthcare system, the doctors today are also feeling the pain of this. We are having a doctor die to suicide every day because there's burnout. The joy of why these people went into these professions is gone. You know, I'm very fortunate and I can boldly say I love what I do and I'm proud of what I do. And I get to spend time with my patients and I get to make a difference. But this is a choice that I made 8 years ago. And my life changed because of my own loss of my mother, my own tragedy. And this is where I feel this is an opportunity. I keep coming back to this. People can make a difference. We're going to survive through this. It's just going to be how we're going to come out of it. And you mentioned already some people, once they've been through it, they're getting sick again. So again, being prepared. How do we build up our immune system? Treating the antibiotics, is that truly the answer? Or is that a setup for next infection?
And I'm curious, and I know that it's a complicated area for how cannabis touches health. And, there's a lack of clinical data. In your opinion, what is the role of cannabis going forward, whether it's on the medical side or the recreational, just adult use side? How does it touch everything that we're talking about?
Wow, now you're going to hit my heart. Okay, so I really look at cannabis as a solution to a global situation. And I've called cannabis the exit drug with many intentions, but I look at cannabis as two basic breakdowns. One is for medicine and one is for industrial use. And when we talk about medicine, I consider food as medicine, and I look at cannabis as food and medicine. And the industrial properties of cannabis, I believe that because we removed cannabis from our society, we led to a lot of problems that we face today. Our climate change, our environment, the impact that we've done to the earth, the amount of plastics that we've produced and contaminated our water systems, not just here, but globally, the animals that have been impacted, and what the impact is for the future. What I believe is that when cancer started to emerge, you could see there's a direct correlation of when cannabis was removed from our society. And I believe by having people understand that there is a system that most healthcare providers know jack about, which is the endocannabinoid system. I have multiple degrees, and yet I never ever learned about this system. I've been learning about it on my own for about 11 years. And understanding, educating healthcare providers and the world that there's been a stigma related to cannabis and that there's a lack of education about the endocannabinoid system, that's become my mission. And I'm doing it through education. And I believe that if cannabis could become a first-line option for patients, we could be able to reduce many of the pharmaceutical drugs that patients are started on. And I believe some of these pharmaceutical drugs, again, pros and cons, can also be causing our patients' health, their immune system to be suppressed. And cannabis can help boost their immune system. And even if they don't want to consume it by inhalation or other ways, if we just had it be available as a food for people and understand that it is so easily digestible and that it can be a source of omega-3s and omega-6s and how that can help people's overall health improve.
You talk about going through education in the medical field and not even learning about the endocannabinoid system. My primary care physician a couple of years ago said, "Oh, Bob Hoban, I know who you are and I know what you do. And I have a real problem with the fact that you call medical marijuana. What's the medical side of it? It's people self-medicating. That's not medicine." And to which I sort of snarkily respond, "Well, you know, I bet you don't even know what the endocannabinoid system is, as if I know. I'm just a lawyer. I'm just repeating what I've been told. I try to understand it as best I could." And he looked at me and he says, "The what system?" And I described it and I said, "Well, you should talk to so-and-so." And I sent him a couple of documents. And all of a sudden, he's a major proponent of the fact that we have this system in our body. So the way that I've described it, and tell me if I'm right about this, to people that don't necessarily understand the endocannabinoid system, is that it's a system that's in your body that is extremely sensitive, that effectively promotes homeostasis or just overall wellness. Is that an accurate way to describe this system?
I love it. So I take it one step further. I say the endocannabinoid system is for us to help us to be at ease. And if we're not at ease, we are at dis-ease. And I use the words of Dr. DiMaggio, who uses five words. He says, the endocannabinoid system is meant for us to relax, eat, sleep, forget, or protect. To me, I describe the endocannabinoid system in one word, life. Life. Because if any one of those things are not at ease, it's going to affect your life. And this is what is so beautiful about cannabis, because it doesn't affect everybody the same at the same time. And this is why I look at, we're facing this pandemic right now, and some people are taking it with stride. some people have been able to get it, they recover from it, and they move on. They're strong for themselves, and they're helping other people. So this is what this endocannabinoid system is meant to do, and yet our doctors don't know about it.
It's nuts.
That's criminal.
It is criminal. That's an excellent way to put it. Given the fact that we have this system in our body that's intended to do certain things, what is conventional wisdom, or what does the science seem to suggest about how that system may or may not assist people going through the symptoms associated with COVID-19?
Well, you know, this is where we understand that there's receptors for the cannabinoid system that are throughout our body, and why this one plant is working for so many different ailments. We know that cannabis has been antibacterial, antiviral, and MRSA has been treated with different cannabinoids. We know that cannabinoids are an antioxidant and neuroprotectant. The government has a patent for this information. So this is not me bringing this information. The government knows about this. My question is, why don't we want everybody to know about this?
Why indeed? You know, as you said,
and why, Doctor, isn't everybody curious about it?
As you said, Dr. Uma, this is, you know, there's a pattern. If not a pattern, there is just a long history of these pandemics. And we are living through a time now where it really is important for people to learn something, to walk away from this with something, an added perspective, and going forward to ensure that we're not going to be in this same position as we are right now. Do you have any parting thoughts for us? It's been such a beautiful conversation with you, but just preparing for that next pandemic, the preventative steps that you can take, anything else you can share with us?
Absolutely. Dr. Uma says, you know, one healthy person can help four other people. One sick person takes four other people's help. So let's prepare to be healthy and be able to help others. And this is about hope and healing.
Well, the message of hope is the one that we hope to really bring through as we record this podcast series. And at the end of the day, I've said it a million times, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. The people in our lives, God willing, are going to be there tomorrow. And for better or for worse, life always will go on, and business and this industry will continue to develop and go on. So as we talk about how things are hopeful, what is the upshot to how long it will take, in your opinion, for something to regain a sense of normality, or at least the people across this country and around the world begin to recognize that this is something that we dealt with, we took extreme measures, and we can at least begin to hopefully change our behavior, change our patterns in terms of healthcare. But when does normality come back around, or any semblance thereof?
I think normality begins today, Bob. I think this is what we have to say. This, the quicker we adapt to this, is what it is right now. And not wait for tomorrow. You know, that's what I believe in. It's like right now, capture the moment. Enjoy what we can every moment. Make others happy. Take care of yourself. Do the very best that you can.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. It means a lot that you'd spend some time with us. Hopefully you stay safe and sound, and our best wishes to you and your family. We know there's a lot of stuff going on, and look forward to hopefully seeing you sometime soon.
And I want to leave you with my one quote, which is, cannabis is not an entrance drug. It's an exit drug for pharmaceuticals, narcotics, alcohol, and nicotine. And I hope people stay away from the alcohol and also the nicotine and use cannabis instead of the other drugs that could be harmful for you.
Heard loud and clear. It's been such a pleasure, Dr. Uma. You take care.
God bless. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.